This is Fresh Air, and I'm Terry Gross. My guest is jazz singer Abby Lincoln. Abby Lincoln started her career in the early 1950s as a supper club singer. With the encouragement of club owners and her manager, Lincoln cultivated a very seductive image, wearing tight revealing gowns and singing romantic ballads. Lincoln's self-image started to change in the late 50s when she met jazz drummer Max Roach, who introduced her to modern jazz and to a performing style influenced by the new black consciousness. They got married, and in the years they stayed together, they recorded a series of albums. Instead of pop arrangements, Lincoln was backed by great jazz performers. Her songs took on a political edge, and she became active in the freedom movement. In the 1960s, Lincoln also had an acting career. She co-starred in the acclaimed independent film drama Nothing But a Man, about a young black couple in the South, and she co-starred opposite Sidney Poitier in the romantic comedy For the Love of Ivy. In 1974, after a 10-year hiatus from recording, she went to Africa, where she was given the name Aminata by the president of Guinea, and the name Mosheka by Zaire's minister of information. She uses the name Aminata Mosheka alongside Abby Lincoln to represent her African heritage. This is Abby Lincoln as recorded on her latest album, Talking to the Sun. The song, You're My Thrill, is one she's been singing for many years. Abby Lincoln writes her own songs now as well as singing standards. She grew up in the 1930s in rural Michigan. I asked Abby Lincoln when she first got interested in music.
As a child at home, I'm one of 12 children, and there's an old piano in the house that my father furnished for us. And I was the only one seemingly who was interested in the piano. I found solace there. And a companionship, because even though I was one of 12 people, I was really lonely, you know, for companionship, for understanding. That is true still in my life. I came here as one person, and I found my unity, something of my unity there, and through just sitting and picking out a melody on the piano, because it didn't get on my mother's nerves, thank goodness.
So the music you heard on the farm was mostly church music?
I didn't hear much music on the farm. The music that I made, really, there was a victrola and songs that seemed way far away somehow.
Like from another culture?
Yes.
What songs were those?
One was called, it was a man singing a song about a pal. Oh, pal, oh, gal, you left me all alone, a sad song. And somebody told me that it was about a dog. But I thought, well, it could have been about a dog, but it was somebody that he loved a lot. Things like that. I don't remember music other than that, and then when the hymns that we learned in church. But they were not, that was not my inspiration for singing. When I was 14, my sister brought a recording home of Billie Holiday and Coleman Hawkins the same day. I heard them both, and he was playing Body and Soul. I don't remember what Billy was singing. And over the years, it's like a flower or like a tree you become, and you become more and more of yourself.
At what point did you realize you were good enough so that other people would want to hear you and you could actually make a profession of it?
I didn't think about a profession. Really, I didn't know there was such a thing until I was about 19, because I grew up on a farm, and we didn't know about things like that in Michigan on the farm. But my first audiences were like my relatives, you know, at home and at school. So I was doing solo work, singing songs on holy days when I was 6 and 7, and in school, in high school. But still, I wasn't thinking of it as a career. It was something I was doing. I always thought I would get married and that would be everything. And then I went to Honolulu, and it was made easy for me. I didn't have to scrounge for jobs, you know. When I started working in nightclubs, I had an agent, and there was always a place for a singer somehow.
When you started singing in nightclubs, well, judging from the cover, anyways, of the That's Him record, you were wearing,
that's
evening
late
gowns.
Into my career.
Oh, that's later on? Yeah.
Yes, I started as Anna Marie. That's the name my people named me. Anna Marie Wooldridge is the name I was born to. And I met a man named Bob Russell, who named me Abby Lincoln, and introduced me to the svelte, chic world of the supper club.
Was it hard to fit into it, having come from a farm in Michigan?
Yes, because I never really felt it. You know, they talked about my being sexy, and they said all these things because I had a press agent, of course, you know. And they decided that was the image that they were going to put forth of this wonderful-looking woman who didn't have much talent, though. I mean, she couldn't sing much. This is what I got with the press agent and through this management, because people like you to be like that. Then they think they can handle you. If they tell you that you don't have anything, you become dependent upon them. Bob Russell gave me a lot of wonderful gifts. But in the process of all this, I'm saying I learned to not trust myself, because I wasn't studying to be truly an artist. But they were interested in making money, and I was just biding my time until I found me a man. So, by the time I met Roach, I was already, had made the cover of Ebony magazine, and I had made a movie with Jane Mansfield called A Girl Can't Help It. And I had a career that I hadn't planned, but still I was there. And so I left that and went with Roach, with Max. He told me that I didn't have to do things like that.
What did you think when he told you that?
I was relieved.
Uh-huh.
And I believed him because I knew he was a great artist. I had a chance to watch him perform in California. I didn't know anything about Max Roach or Charlie Parker or none of these people, because I wasn't approaching the music from that standpoint. I knew the people who were popular, who I'd hear on the radio, and I happened to like Billie Holiday and Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald and Peggy Lee. There's a lot of people who I heard, Lena Horne.
So you met many other jazz musicians.
I met the jazz musicians when I met Max Roach.
And you started recording with jazz musicians.
I started recording. Yes, it always, well, I started to work with virtuoso musicians for the first time in my life. This is really what happened to me. I didn't know what a virtuoso artist was until I met this crowd of musicians and singers. Even though I was listening to Billie Holiday, I didn't know who she was, really. I was singing the best I could. But there's a kind of a culture that this music is, and I wasn't involved in that then.
How did it change your singing to be singing with such excellent jazz musicians?
Well, it's like anything else. You know, anything that you do over and over, you get better at. And the influences, it's wonderful to be privileged, and it is a privilege, and to be brought into the inner circle on that level, and I was.
But did you find, like, your phrasing changed or that
no.
that you would interpret a song any differently with the different kind of accompaniment?
No. I'm still myself. I'm myself, but I'm more myself now. There were pointers and that, like, for instance, Max would say to me, sing on the beat, because I had a tendency to sing a long line. And I knew where the beat was, but I figured it was somebody else's business and not my own. And I would say to him, well, the band didn't swing. He said to me, you're supposed to swing. You're supposed to be the rhythm section. Things like that. Thelonious Monk telling me that it was all right to make a mistake. And, well, from they were always, there was always something for me that they gave. But it was through Max. At first they said that Max was out of his mind and that he was misguided or something because I wasn't supposed to be a singer on that level. But, you know, people all have crosses to bear.
I'd like to play a 1957 recording that you made, which features Max Roach on drums and Kenny Dorham, Sonny Rollins, Wynton Kelly, Paul Chambers all perform on it. How did this session come to be?
I was in New York. I had come to New York to do a screen test for the Billie Holiday story. This was years ago. And they told me that after I'd come and taken an apartment and everything, they told me that they were going to use Lana Turner or somebody like that, or Ava Gardner. Really, truly, this is the truth, Terry. But anyway, I was in New York, and I was seeing Max Roach. And he said to me, how would you like to make a jazz album? And I said, I'm not a jazz singer. And he said, you're black, aren't you? That's when I started to see myself through the music on another level. I never thought of music on this level before. I used to sing songs that Billie Holiday and Sarah and the other singers would sing. And I didn't know what I was saying, really. I was just singing. I would sing My Man. But I discovered I didn't want that in my life. If I met a man like that, I know what to do for him. You just leave him alone, you know? I didn't want to sing sad songs. And this masochistic woman who tells all, it never appealed to me. So, and since it was done so well, I mean, Bessie Smith and Billie Holiday and... Well, Ethel Waters, many women have told this side of the story. Now there's something else to say, and I believe I'm the one to say it.
Let's get back to this 1957 mm-hmm. session. The album's called That's Him, and we'll be hearing
Max is,
you singing That's Him.
Yeah, he put this group of musicians together. He is really the producer of the album, even though it doesn't say so.
Okay, let's listen to this 1957 recording with my guest, Abby Lincoln.
Civilians, I'd pick him out in the darkest caves and hallways. I would know him always beyond a doubt. Identification comes easily to me because that's he. You know the way you feel when there is autumn in the air. That's him. That's him. The way you feel when Antoine has just finished with That's him. That's him. You know the way you feel when you smell bread baking. The way you feel when suddenly a tooth stops aching. Wonderful world, wonderful you. That's him. That's him. He is as simple as a swim in summer. Not arty, not actory. He's like a plumber when you need a plumber. He's satisfactory. You know the way you feel when you wanna knock. Your heart is gone for good. Wonderful world, wonderful you.
That's him, performed by Abby Lincoln, recorded in 1957. Some of the musicians feature that on that album are Kenny Durham, Sonny Rollins, Wynton Kelly, Paul Chambers, Max Roach. We were just talking about some of the songs that are on the album That's Him, and some of them are like My Man, or, mm-hmm. you know, about how miserable, no matter how miserable he treats me, I will still always love him. Mm-hmm. And you've rejected lyrics, singing lyrics like that.
Yes, because that is the position of a slave, you know, when you're in bondage. And you cannot find your way to health. It's a miserable existence. I know that a song is a prayer because you say it's something that I speak over and over, and it's with music. And it's amplified, and it goes into people's ears, and it will manifest in my life one way or another. So I am particular about the messages that come from me.
Is that why you've started writing your own songs?
Yes. I'm sure that's why Billy and Bessie, all the great singers, write their own words, because then I can say exactly what I want to. No matter who writes the song, if I sing it, I usually have to change a word or two to make it my own.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Pearl Bailey would mind me telling this, because when I was, we were making For Love of Ivy, she came to a place where I was, and she told me that she was falling out. You know, she'd been falling out. And I remember reading about it, too. She said the doctor told her that she must stop singing I'm Tired. She said the doctor told her, you stop singing that song if you want to live. Or words to this effect, you know. And she's right. Because if you sing about your degradation, then that is a flower that you water and you let it grow. I sing about the positiveness of my life, and because that's what I'm concerned with. Mm-hmm.
I guess the most political record that you recorded was the Freedom Now Suite, which was written by Max Roach and Oscar Brown.
Social. I think that music is social. If people come to political conclusions because of what they hear, but it's not, as far as I'm concerned, does not deal with the politics, because politics, as far as I can see, that's an impure form, anyway.
Well, how do you feel about the Freedom Now Suite, listening back to it? And I don't know that you actually listen to your records.
I'm the voice. Yeah, sometimes. I listened to it a lot when it was first made. And I paid a lot of dues for being involved in this work, because the industry is frightened of anything that is the least bit different. After you persevere with something that is real and it is a part of you. And you pay your dues. Then they come to get you, and everybody is patterned after you. That's all. Because how could this cause such a stir? A little music about something that is happening in the world.
What effect did that have? You said that was it hard for you to work afterwards?
I recorded after that. The man that the A&R man was Nat Hentoff for this album and for the Straight Ahead album. And I believe that for a while the word was out on me. They said to stay away from me because I was a radical nut. Because I came from supper clubs and the glamorous image with Marilyn Monroe's dress to the black woolly stockings. This is the way a producer described me to myself one day. He'd never met me. He said he heard I was living in the village wearing black woolly stockings and wearing my hair natural. Well, he wasn't far from the truth. I wasn't living in the village. I was living in where I am now.
But that was a terrible thing that your hair would be natural.
Yes, isn't that pitiful? These are the things that I've been fighting for, nothing that you'd think you'd even have to fight for, you know? Or for, instead of singing back fence gossip about the man I'm with, I tell them about his attributes because it's a pitiful woman who lives with a man and talks about him behind his back.
Did you take a leave of absence from singing for a while?
No. I am like a star, like, I guess all stars are, you know, you shine if the light is just right. And I go in and out, and mostly I'm in. I make a few appearances, but I'm always singing. I do a lot of work sometimes in schools. Sometimes I go to elementary schools. I worked at the Parisian Room in Los Angeles. I helped open that room for names because people who considered themselves big stars didn't work there at first. But I went because I know that we are bigger than the rooms. That's what's wonderful about this music. You can put it anywhere, and it will make the room something, you know? So I taught school for about a year, university. That was kind of frightening, too. I never went to university. But I know that I do have something to teach and something to say. I was teaching theater. The work that I have continues. I have a collection of paintings. And yes, and I would sing. It was funny, Terry, because even though sometimes I hadn't worked as a singer in maybe 6 months, when I'd come to the stage, my voice would be richer and fuller. It's practicing off the instrument. That's what Max used to call it. You bring your love and your enthusiasm to everything that you do, and so that part of you grows. As I would write, and I would paint or do whatever there was for me to do, because I see myself as a practicing artist mostly, and my work comes before my career. The career is a result of my work, but I had my work long before I had a career.
Do you ever sing in the house just like for your own pleasure?
Mm-hmm. Play the piano and sing and find songs, too. And it's for the sake of my soul, just like I did when I was a little girl, for the sake of companionship, you know, to be in touch with that part of me that keeps me alive.
In the early 70s, I think it was 72, mm-hmm. You took a trip to Africa. And after having started a group in America called Women of... The Cultural Association for Women of African Heritage. You went to Africa and saw life there firsthand. Was it what you expected?
Yeah, it was. But I didn't go expecting anything. I just went home. And I knew they didn't know where to place me, that because I had my hair in braids and I had these African dresses. And they would say to me, what nation are you? I said, I'm a citizen in America. And they would say, oh. Everybody knew that I was an African woman. Africa is a state of mind that is a part of my life, that is, it's a consciousness.
You were given another name in Africa.
Yeah.
Aminata Moseka. Which do you prefer to use now? Which of your names?
Aminata Moseka is an addition to my name. My name is Anna Marie Wooldridge, Gabby Lee, Abby Lincoln, Aminata Moseka. Those are the names so far that I have used. When I was married, I called myself Roach. It's, in a way, it's a history of where I've been, all these names. Aminata Moseka is a recognition of my African ancestry. Anna Marie Wooldridge is an English name, and I hardly look English, you know? Not originally, anyway. There are lots of people in England today, but I don't represent the English people, really. Abby Lincoln is also English. Aminata Moseka is a name from West Africa. Aminata is, and Moseka, she's from Zaire. The Minister of Information told me that Moseka was a god of love in the form of a maiden. He didn't tell me it was a goddess. And I have been on my way for a little while now in seeing myself in the godhood. The women are gods and the men are gods because God is an action and a state of being, a consciousness. So I don't cut myself short because I'm female any longer. And that's why my need for companionship with a man, even though it is as it always was in its necessity, I don't look for him to be God alone anymore.
What was it that changed that for you?
Just the years I've had a chance to live and watching people stumble with this burden the men carry of being all and everything and being to blame for everything. And my need to be and to be responsible. I am human first and in female form. And I have the power of the gods just as all people do. The women do, and they are responsible.
Do you know what your recording future will be?
No. I don't know what anything is going to be. I never have. I have never been able to see a year ahead and say, I'm going to be here and I'm going to be there. I live like month to month or week to week. But no, I don't know. And it keeps me on the edge of my seat, too.
That was jazz singer Abby Lincoln. Several of her albums from the late 1950s have been recently reissued on the Fantasy Original Jazz Classics label. Her latest album, Talking to the Sun, is on the Enja record label. Fresh Air is a production of WHYY Radio in Philadelphia. The engineers for this edition were Ron Carson and Jay Goldman. Fresh Air is edited by Maeve McGoran. Amy Salad is the associate producer. Danny Miller and I co-produce the show. My name's Terry Gross. Thanks for listening.
National distribution of Fresh Air is made possible with the financial support of listeners to WHYY-FM, Philadelphia. Additional funding comes from National Public Radio member stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR, National Public Radio.